It's time for Twig This Week in Google. On today's episode, we're going to talk about Walmart, Google, shacking up, kind of doing the Amazon thing in a new way. We're going to be talking about Android Oreo. I've got my Oreo cookie right here. Samsung's big Galaxy Note 8 event, and a whole lot more. This Week in Google is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 419, recorded Wednesday, August 23rd, 2017. Foie gras lollipop. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Felix Gray. Give your eyes the break they deserve. Felix Gray glasses filter blue light and reduce eye strain without the ugly yellow tint distortion of other computer glasses. Go to felixgrayglasses.com/twig to try a pair today. And by LegalZoom. August is National Make-A-Will Month. Prepare for your family's future. Visit legalzoom.com/prepare today for a free estate planning kit. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life, and that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. This is the show where we talk about Google, the Google, sometimes as I like to call them, the Goog, the cloud. Sometimes we venture off into different directions, Facebook, social media, all sorts of topics. But, you know, we've got a lot of Google stuff to talk about today. So I have a feeling we're going to be mostly on point. I'm Jason Howell, filling in for Leo Laporte, who is, I think he's in Anaheim, right? He's traveling to Anaheim for the podcast movement. There we go. So he's not here this afternoon. I'm joining you. I'm super thrilled to be back, joined as always by Jeff Jarvis, BuzzMachine.com, professor at the CUNY School of Journalism. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey. So is it El Google, La Google, Der Google?
I think, well, you know what? Based on the success of a trademark story that we're going to be talking about a little bit later, it might be all over the place. It might have to change, and it might stay
Google. Might be lowercase Google. Yeah,
exactly. Google might be the new Kleenex.
I don't think they're going to lose that, but we'll talk.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that. It's good to see you, man. Also joining us as usual, Stacey Higginbotham, creator of the IoT podcast at iotpodcast.com and the Internet of Things newsletter at stacyoniot.com. How you doing, Stacey?
I am super, super well.
Super well. Super good.
I am excited to be here today. I've had a lot of coffee.
Excellent.
No problem.
That makes for the best show. I think we're all super caffeinated.
Everyone be alert.
And you have kind of some things happening in the background behind the scenes. Your Google Home is booting up because you're going to if we can get it to work, you're going to maybe test out the making a phone call with your Google Home. Yeah.
We love doing these raw demos where we don't actually know what's going to happen. We troubleshoot so you don't have to.
That's right. We make telephone calls because no one makes telephone calls, so you might as well see someone making telephone calls. I don't know. I guess I don't make very many telephone calls in my life anymore. It's all text. It's all messaging. But it's nice to have this feature. It hit my Google Home a couple of days ago, and then I promptly made a telephone call to myself because I didn't want to bother anybody, basically.
Because you have no friends? Because that's how I felt when I alerted my Amazon Echo to its calling features. I was like, I don't have any friends. Wow, look at that.
I'm going to message my phone from my Echo.
Exactly. I was like, someone go in the room. We'll try it from here.
I mean, I'm sure you know people who do have the Echo. Have you ever thought about like giving them a call on their Echo?
The only person I've ever called on the Echo, well, I've called my daughter in her room. So we use it like an intercom, actually. That's been useful the last couple of days. But mostly, I call Kevin Toefel just to like freak him out in the middle of the day.
Do you have drop-in privileges with Kevin?
Kevin doesn't have a show.
Oh, okay.
No, I just make the formal phone call. Because he and like, I think one other person are the only people I have that are my Echo friends. But Google, since it uses your phone number, you could have real friends,
yeah,
with phone privileges.
It's true. I mean, it's a real phone. Whatever. If you've got Google Voice, if you've got Project Fi, your phone number is going to show up, and otherwise, they're not going to pick up the phone. because it's an unknown caller. It's like,
but does it do the predicted spam caller? Like, I love that that's Google a good question. Does that.
Yeah. That is the greatest thing.
I love it so much. Although it doesn't
I doubted
get the,
it once, and I learned. It's like the Waze lady. You never, ever, ever disagree with the Waze lady. You don't disagree with the Google spam notification.
It's true. You just got to give your trust. Give your trust to Google on this. Same thing with navigation. I completely agree. It's any of those times when I'm like, why are you taking me down there? That couldn't possibly save me time is when I end up screwing myself. So,
so
just put all your faith in Google.
To save like a minute or two, my husband will sit in a parking lot or in our driveway plotting the best route. And I'm kind of like, you know what? It's not worth it. Like, let's just go. Let's just move. And he's like, no, got to see the best route. It's a little freaky. It's a little OCD-ish, it feels like sometimes.
Toggling the best route within the app or trying to come up with the best route himself?
Just like, we'll be at Target or something. And he's like, oh, we should go home. And there are not that many ways to get home from Target. We don't have to optimize quite so much. He'll spend a minute looking that stuff up in the parking lot while someone's waiting for the spot.
Well, one of my favorite tweet this week. My favorite tweet this week was a guy saying that 20 years of wonderful marriage, the secret to success, GPS.
Mm-hmm. GPS is pretty magical. It takes the power out of everyone's hand.
It saves you from the argument, the worst arguments of all.
I don't know
but
how
then
I'd live my life
Stacey
adds
a whole
Jimmy.
New thing in,
yes, to be honest.
Is obsessing over roots. I like that. I would do that, I think.
Yeah, I think as we get more technology in our lives, where we're like, kind of like, it's the same thing. It's like Yelp paralysis when you're trying to pick a restaurant.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, let's look at all the reviews. Is this really the best restaurant? So I tease my husband, but it's a really profound issue, I think.
Meanwhile, I mean, if you saved a minute in the app and you spent a minute up at the top, it doesn't matter, right? Trying to figure out the best route. So you might as well just dive right in. And hit the road.
All right. So we actually had real things to talk about.
Okay.
Not just complaining about.
All right. Well,
I waylaid that.
We do. I think that's important, though. I think this gets to, you know, everybody, hopefully all of you have a Google Home and you wonder whether you should make calls with it. So not to mention, you'll also be able to connect your device to your Google Home via Bluetooth. That's another thing that's coming to Google Home. I think right now, I haven't tested that out myself, but apparently Google is pushing out Bluetooth capability to Google Home. So you have a couple of new things to try from this year's Google I/O. Still a few things not here yet. They had mentioned proactive assistance, which was things like if you've got a calendar event that Google Home is tracking or that assistant is tracking, it will tell you in advance, like, hey, we just noticed that there's a 5-minute slowdown on your route to that calendar event, so you better hit the road right now. So proactively, it'll give you information to hopefully improve your life, not complicate it. And then also, what was the other one? It was the view of your information on other screens. What was that called? Visual responses. It's the other function that we haven't seen yet. I don't know what we're going to get to.
Christmas? No.
Yeah, possibly so. Do you want to try and call someone real quick before we move on? Because, I mean, we're already talking about Google Home. Do you think it's all set up?
Yeah. I actually don't know. That's why I'm like sitting here going, I think it's set up, but it doesn't look linked.
Now,
so
when
I'm
you
shutting
do it,
out of everything.
Yeah, when you do it for the first time, it actually gives you like, before I make the call, let me tell you a few things about calling with Google Home. So it'll probably do that the very first time you try. But
so I just need to tell it to make the call?
Yeah, you say call so-and-so, or you can say call business, OKG, call what a business name, and then it, you know, taps into the search.
So it doesn't say my phone, my Google account is linked. Well, let's see what happens. So I'm going to call a business, or can I call someone from my contacts?
You can do that too. I think if you've shared your contacts with a system, which you probably already have. I don't know exactly on that one. You can call from your contacts. I just don't know if it's going to let you do that without explicit permission.
All right. Well, let's call my husband. I'm going to tell him. He's at the same place Leo is.
Oh.
But let me warn him really fast because
warning, like, Leo's there.
Well, yeah, that too. I'm telling him not to answer if you don't want to be on the air.
That's probably smart.
Yeah, right.
Probably smart. We don't want to ambush him.
So I just ask it to call.
Yeah, you say, okay,
okay. Call. So guys, I have to actually activate it. So sorry about that. Avert your ears, phones.
Mute.
Hey, call Andrew.
Google Home. Here's a couple of notes. First, emergency numbers are not available. At the end of your call, tell me to hang up or tap the top of the Google Home. Calling Andrew Alleman, mobile.
At least it didn't read out the phone.
That was quick.
Yeah. It gives you that the very first time and then moves.
Oh, he's in the conference call.
After the tone, and Google Voice will try to connect you.
Oh. So I just hung up on him because he was like, he's confused.
He's like, no, I'm not answering. But there you go. See, it works. One thing I noticed is like, if you connect to a system that requires dial presses in order, number presses to navigate, I don't think you can do that.
Oh, IVR systems? Okay. Yeah. Oh, I could call my pharmacy and we could try an IVR system.
I just don't know how you enter a number. Like, I don't, you
hey,
can't.
Call HEB Pharmacy.
Just as a reminder, emergency calls aren't available.
Oh, God, she says it every time?
I didn't know.
Maybe you're calling a pharmacy.
Home. Now, let's get started yet. Calling HEB Pharmacy, Maine.
Okay.
I knew it was HEB is HEB.
Good afternoon. Thank you for calling your HEB Pharmacy, located at Village Center Drive and Far West Boulevard.
What do we want to order?
If you're calling from a physician's office, press 1. If you're a pharmacy customer, press 2.
2.
Let's masquerade as a dumb physician.
2.
Yeah, you tap the microphone 2 times to do 2. No.
That was an option.
Yeah, I don't. Sorry, Runs with Scissors, who said, you triggered my home. Yeah, it's bound to happen. We'll mute it in the downloaded version. So I don't know
What's the advantage of this?
Of phone calls?
Hands-free calling. It's the same thing that you would do, I guess, if you had your phone next to you.
Right.
Is there an advantage? Oh, I have one. This is actually a good use case. If you have one in your home and your kid wants to get in touch with you, they can call you even if they don't have a phone. So it's like a landline in your house, unless you want to make emergency calls because it doesn't do that.
Right. Which it really should, let's be honest. It should be able to do that, but I guess I kind of understand why it didn't launch with it. Hopefully they get that eventually. That's a really good point. The kids could just reach you no matter what if they don't have a phone.
Or your babysitter. You could just be like, call, Stacy, and I'm totally going to tell my babysitters about this. This is great. Okay.
Now it does work with multiple accounts, right? So if you've set up multiple accounts, then it's going to determine who's talking and therefore whose contact list that query is hitting. If your babysitter tries to call you, is it going to recognize that you are you because your babysitter is different from you? You know what I mean? Like your babysitter doesn't have a contact list. Maybe your babysitter would need your number in order to do that. I don't know, but
we could have.
Oh, right. That's a really good point. Yeah.
I have a babysitter coming in, 15 minutes or so.
Cool. Bring the babysitter in here. We'll talk to the babysitter and get to the bottom of this.
Hi, welcome to your job with me. Would you come this way, please? I need to set you up and have your voice recorded forever on Google.
And we're going to release it in the form of a podcast. Are you okay with that?
Well, her house has a Google Home. So her voice is already in Google's cloud. How crazy would it be if she walked in and Google tracked it to her contacts?
Oh, that would be freaky. That would venture into the weird, creepy area.
We would all be like,
that would be big news. Anyways, there you go. I could see myself like in the kitchen taking care of stuff. Need to call my parents just to check in, say hi. Like I would use that totally. Hopefully it sounds good on the other end. I haven't tested that out to know what it actually sounds like when you're calling from that microphone across the room. You know how roomy it is. It's probably going to sound kind of echoey, to be honest. But
this the room I'm in sounds echoey. So
sounds great through this microphone. We need a high.
This is a great
Google
microphone.
Home. Yeah.
I think this is a
Heil. Okay. It is a Heil, yeah, the PR40s. Excellent. All right. So Google Home, there we go. We started off with that. News today, kind of along this tip, is that Walmart and Google are getting into a partnership. They're partnering up on product sales via Google Home, which is the first time that Walmart has offered its products online outside of its own site. So kind of a big deal for Walmart. Google, of course, doesn't have, you know, up until this deal, doesn't have what Amazon obviously has as a feature of the Echo, which is its tight integration with its own services for selling products. So now they do. Walmart, I mean, by many accounts, would be kind of the closest competitor in the space with Amazon as far as the, you know, the sales aspect, although a distant second, I would say. But you guys going to buy anything with your voice? is this something that you're going to want to use? What do you think?
I buy very few things via voice.
Yeah.
It's mostly music because it's definitive, or it's reordering things I've already ordered from Amazon. So I guess I could buy something from Walmart, but
you have an Echo, so you're probably going to use
it. And I'm also a snob. I'm sorry. I just don't shop at Walmart.
Yeah.
And I know I'm bad.
Oh, it's out, you elitist, you.
I'm not great about this unless I'm in a small town. And
Stacey, I couldn't agree more. I go in there, I get hives.
See, yeah, I feel that way about TJ Maxx too. Oh God, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all bad. We're learning so much about you.
Worse.
Okay.
Oh, Stacey.
Yeah,
Stacey,
I would rather shop at Target.
She's soon going to be putting up Instagrams with hashtags that say Armani.
I'm going to say Armani Valentino and Hermes. Yes. Is it Hermes? I can't.
Hermes. Yeah, I believe so. Anyways,
Hermes was it? Yes.
I buy my ammunition at Academy or Cabela's.
Oh no, that's scary. Okay, all right. This has gone off the edge here. You're armed?
I am not armed. I mean, I have arms. No,
but not armed. In this room, anyways.
So, okay.
Not until you get the thing that punches Leo's head.
Not until I get that, yeah. But so, yeah, Walmart, the choices are too many, and it's Walmart, and that's all I'm going to say. Okay. So I probably won't use it.
Okay. I'm sure there are a lot of people that do shop at Walmart. I wonder how much that Venn diagram of Walmart shoppers and Google Home owners crosses, but maybe, I mean, you know, obviously the goal here is for Walmart to increase online purchases. So maybe exposing it to new markets, new audiences, or new customers through that. And Google wants people to think of Google Home in the same way that people think of the Echo as a shopping device. I just don't know how many people are actually shopping with their voice, but maybe that's because I only have a Google Home and I haven't done that yet. And I don't know the amazing, you know, aspects of it firsthand. But
you know, it'd be really awesome is if someone built a service that like scans barcodes and you could scan it and it would actually tie into both the Amazon and Google with Walmart and then get you like the best price. Like if we were truly talking about competition, that's the sort of fulfillment that would happen. Mm-hmm. And then these guys just turn into like fulfillment houses.
Yeah.
But that's crazy.
That is crazy.
I know. Look at that. Me thinking about consumer value as opposed to vertical integration and corporate value.
Quit thinking about the consumer. Haven't we learned by now? This is going to happen late September. Google is dropping its $95 Google Express fee. So Google Express is kind of a way that it ties in not only to Walmart, but to Target and Costco, I think, and other brands to deliver their products. They're dropping the $95 fee for that. And
still charging on per delivery.
So from what I understand, it's going to be free delivery as long as it qualifies per merchant. So Walmart, for example, offers free 2-day shipping on purchases over $35. And so if you pay more than $35 for the products that you're buying from Walmart through Google Home, then you will pay no shipping. It's basically passed through from the merchant on the other end. So kind of analogous in some ways to what Amazon is offering with Prime, although Prime you have to pay up front and then you get free shipping for the entire year. You also get a bunch of other services along with that. So the value proposition is a little different. as far as that's concerned.
And you also get a history, and what that'll be kind of interesting because, again, like I said, I use my voice ordering only for reorders because I know what I'm going to get, right? So if it keeps your history for you, so like if I can order Tide detergent from Walmart and always get the same kind of Tide, that actually might be cool.
And the they do, Stacey.
They do.
Easy reorder, which is a feature of Walmart that they announced earlier this year, I think, that essentially tracks both your in-store purchases and your online purchases. So you can sync that account up with Google Express to do exactly what you're talking about.
Meanwhile, the FTC just moments ago approved the Amazon Whole Foods purchase.
Oh.
Oh, really? That just must have happened, right?
Okay. Yes, it just did. So this all becomes really meaty.
Mm-hmm. That is so exciting to me because and this is something I've been thinking about is how I want to order my groceries. And I don't want to sit there and tell Amazon or Google, Apple's, I don't want to read a list to it, right? Nor do I actually think I want to do the dash wand. So I think what would be really awesome is if Amazon and Walmart got a step above and started creating did a tie-in with a recipe site so you could click, I want to make this, this, and this this week. It generates a shopping list based on that plus your staples, and then it's there. So I think there's still a missing piece to make this really easy.
Way back when I was part of the founding team for Epicurious, we worked on just that. It was way too early.
Hmm? Oh, I'm excited because I feel like this is not a crazy thing to want, but maybe
no,
it is.
No. We worked on this for Epicurious. It was way too early because there was no mechanism to actually buy it. And so what would you get? You maybe get a shopping list in your phone. But that was the idea, as you could say. But the complication often is it always comes down to digital inventory. What's your inventory in your house? What do you actually have? Do you really need that ingredient? You don't need to buy every ingredient and everything you make. Mm-hmm. So how does your house know what it has? It's an interesting challenge. It's also a challenge for stores. You could just check it off. Well, you assume you're organized, Stacey, right? Like you. Look at my office. I'm not organized. I also don't cook with a damn darn. But the second problem is now if you're Walmart and if you're Whole Foods, fine, there's digital inventory. When I years ago talked to PayPal and eBay when they were together about trying to get local advertisers involved, the problem they said was that local merchants don't have their inventory digitized. And I wrote up a whole business plan for basically the open table of local merchants that if you handled your inventory anyway, it would then make it available online. And then you start to bring in new development mechanisms, delivery mechanisms, because the U.S. Post Office, if it has any sense, is going to fight for this too. They're going to compete in this space as well. There's going to be tons of local merchants and tons of local delivery options. So you get to a world where you say, I want chilaquiles, and you should be presented with choices as to where and how to get them. That's what is best for you as the consumer.
I agree. I also like chilaquiles.
I was going to say, also the best choice for the consumer is a chilaquile. Yeah.
Very chilaquila. Kia.
Is it Kia?
Chiles.
I've always said chilaquiles.
I didn't put on the rundown the most important thing to talk about, Stacey.
So
I can go run and get it now. No. Oh. I put up a tweet just for Stacey this week. I was in Trader Joe's.
Oh, you bought it?
Oh, I bought it. I haven't. Yes, I haven't eaten it. I looked at this jar of queso and the nutrition was like 0000. I said, how is this possible? It's cheese. And so I tweeted Leo and Stacy came back and very condescendingly but correctly said, it's cheese, Jeff. It's supposed to be cheese. This can't be possible. Yeah,
it's supposed to have milk and protein and fat.
It had milk whey.
That has protein, but your ingredients, that I think you should eat it and we should watch you for the rest of the show just to see if you keel over.
So anyway, I didn't mean to go off on a tangent.
So you disintegrate before our very eyes thanks to the
chili kale is in. Right, there it is. There it is. Trader Joe's queso. There's a picture. That's right. There it is. There's the ingredients.
So cheese dip and But what we're seeing in the nutritional facts there is different than what you saw.
Oh, it is right? Different. Very different.
Okay. All right. I was trying to figure it out. Oh, that's weird.
Now, so what do you think about, like, I'm curious why Amazon didn't buy something like Trader Joe's as opposed to Whole Foods, to be honest. Because their model seems...
Well, their model is just right. Yeah, their model is just right because it's unique properties and, right. and all that. But I think they want to compete on a commodity level too. If you need it, we got it. You want bananas? We got bananas.
And I guess I don't know what Trader Joe's physical footprint is versus Whole Foods either. Like, we just got a Trader Joe.
How many Trader Joe's stores are there?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Trader Joe's number of locations is 465.
465. I'm going to turn down the volume again.
Oh, Whole Foods has like 445.
Just do it again.
That's all?
Here's the summary from the website at wikipedia.org. The 365 Store Shopper Rewards Program.
365. Trader Joe's has more?
Okay. That was...
Wow. Yeah, you're right, Stacey.
That was as of last year. Yeah. 365 Whole Foods markets. According to
465 versus 365.
Actually 468 stores in North America. That's from their company info page. So now it's 468.
Trader Joe's?
Whole Foods. Whole Foods, 468.
They're stores. Even. They're as good as even.
Oh. Huh. All right.
Wow.
Okay. I feel like I've got nothing else to say about this, I guess, other than I can't wait for automation to come to my grocery shopping and meal planning, because it is currently the bane of my week. My life is really easy. I'll be honest. That's like one of the more challenging things I do during the week.
How are they exactly the same? Something's weird here. How are Whole Foods and Trader Joe's saying we have the same exact amount of stores? That's strange.
They're both kind of ritzy, elitist places. There's a lot more. Like, we only have, and we just got 3 Trader Joe's in Austin, or maybe there's only 2. But I feel like in California, there's like a Trader Joe everywhere.
Yeah. New York loves them too. But I go there and I come home late from work. I have stuff in the freezer that I can just throw on and cook. Like, they have the most amazing paella.
Trader Joe's? You couldn't
think it's physically possible. Yes.
Really?
You get a frying pan. You turn up the heat high. That's all you do to it. You open the bag. You pour it in, and it and these little flavor things all go like crazy. And 3 minutes later, you have paella.
I love paella. You just clued
great.
Me in
Trader
on
Joe's paella is great.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Trader Joe's for the. I love the tangents we go on. By the way,
the audience is going nuts right now. Hey, audience! No, you know seriously. What? It's better than me doing politics, isn't it? Okay, so you got a choice. We can talk Trader Joe's queso, or we can talk Trump. Huh? Which would you prefer? Just tell us, because we're gonna go on tangents. It's what we do. Okay, I got it.
So maybe Google should just buy Trader Joe's. Let's think about that. To counter the Amazon Whole Foods threat, Trader Joe's.
I love that. And then you also get the Google Chef's recipes in Trader Joe's frozen food section.
Google Chef is terrible. Sorry. Okay.
No. Hey. I mean the Google Chef's, the commissary Google Chef's.
Oh, I thought you were talking about their little car tries to help you cook, which is...
No. I mean the food at Google.
Got it.
I don't even know about the other Google Chef thing that you're talking about.
Maybe I see it because I'm a woman. It's constantly telling me, it's constantly giving me a card called Culinary Inspiration. And it's the crappiest recipes. Like, it just, they're so random. They're like Bloody Marys, cauliflower bread, roasted watermelon. And it's... I don't understand. Google is so good at
roasted
everything.
Watermelon.
And
that's interesting.
Like, okay, here are my culinary recipes for the day. Yeah, I guess. Wait, yeah.
Is this
like,
in Google Now, Stacey?
It's in Google Now. It's just a card that pops up. Literally, I've told it so many times, I'm not interested. My recipes?
I never get it. Never.
Try
never
something new. Pinto beans, sour cream coffee cake, banana egg pancakes, mulled wine, balsamic Brussels sprouts, moong dal, garbanzo beans, cinnamon roll pancakes, minestrone, and treacle tart.
Mm. Sounds pretty good to me, Stacey.
It's just weird. These are not like things I don't make desserts. Not very often.
You're no fun.
I'm terrible, but and then I actually do search a lot of recipes on Google, but it doesn't show me any of those. So
I'm not even finding that section when I check Google now. Which, by the way, they redesigned Google now. I don't know if you guys have gotten the new, the new design of it. I'm still getting used to it, but it's very colorful and very icon filled, and I don't know. I'm adjusting, but yeah, I can't find the recipe portion here. Carson has it.
Okay.
He's flying over here. Oh, wait a minute. If I went into more stuff, I'm sure it would be in there somewhere, right?
No, I'm going through that myself, but Google knows me.
Mine shows me the weather updates and then stories.
Oh, see recipes for you. Get ideas.
I get dinner recipes. I search for it. Oh, Stacey, you're so right. First thing for me is Pillsbury taco skillet dinner. It thinks I shop at Walmart.
It knows you so well, Jeff.
Then there's Traeger Grills roasted hobo dinners. Who wants to eat hobos?
That's just the beard it's talking to.
See recipes for you. Cooking. Here we go. Try something new. Okay, got it. Baked mac and cheese. It knows Karsten well. I bet I would make a lot of those recipes. Hamburger meat recipe. This is probably what you were talking about, right? It's like a... Yeah.
That sounds okay. Those are actually dinners. Those make so much more sense than mine. Although foie gras, wow.
Foie gras for those nights you decide to make foie gras at home.
Yes.
How many times have I decided I'm going to make foie gras for dinner tonight?
Got some liver lying
around.
Give me
a goose. Where's my goose?
Make it again. See cooking related articles you viewed recently. So there's at least a little bit of a history there. Recently.
There is, but it's really random. That's what I don't get. It picks like a topic and it's like, this is it. It doesn't go by most recent even, or the most often ones. Like there's some recipes I always look up.
Yeah.
I would feel like Google, because I'm Googling for it. Ooh, that's a good segue into like, it should just show me those. It knows I want those, but instead it's, ooh.
Foie gras lollipops. I think I've seen enough internet for the day. I've had enough internet. That's it. I'm done. I'm pretty sure I would not like foie gras lollipops. Just saying. Not a big fan of foie gras.
I think this wins the tangent award for Twitter.
Hey, we brought it back around to Google somehow, right? We showed off a feature.
Barely, man. We're just glancing on Google, you know.
All right. Off the edge. Did you hear me say I was just gonna Google that, meaning search?
Okay, go follow that tangent.
So let's talk
excellent,
about
excellent, Stacey. Excellent.
Let's talk about is it trademark? It's trademark, right?
Sure. Yeah, what is it? Let me find that. This is the Supreme Court is basically so. Okay, all right. Let's take a step back. Is Google too generic? That's what this is all about. Should it have trademark protection? Google, as we know, is very commonly used as synonymous with search. Let me Google that for you. I went home and I Googled this thing, whatever. Instead of search, we've just gotten so used to saying that. Back in 2012, there was a guy, Chris Gillespie, who registered 363 domains with the word Google in it. Google sued, and they won forfeiture of those domains. Chris Gillespie then sued to invalidate that trademark because, to him, his case is Google means to search. It doesn't necessarily mean Google as a trademark, as a company, whatever. Appeals panel ruled in Google's favor. Saying Google means more than just search because Google has a lot of other products anyways. Also critical to this is that it would have to Gillespie would have to prove that Google is an exclusive term that competitors must use in order to describe their own product, which I think is absolutely not the case.
Yeah, I doubt that. Though I can see Microsoft doing that for spite.
Yeah.
Hey, Google it on Bing.
Yes. Totally.
Google this on Bing. Bing that on Google.
Could totally see it.
You woke up my home, Stacey.
Oh, sorry.
He appealed his court loss to the high court, now petitioning the Supreme Court to review the lower court's ruling. And yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now. We do not know what's going to happen. I mean, it's not going to happen, right? Google's going to retain this. I don't see how that doesn't happen.
Didn't that happen? Kleenex, Xerox, where else has... Because Kleenex, is Kleenex generic now? Where's my AP style book?
What's that? Escalator is thermos, aspirin, videotape. These were all trademarked. And
videotape was a trademark.
Apparently, wow. That's what the Ars Technica article said. Were once trademarked, and what was the term that they used? It's genericide.
Genericide,
which is when. Becomes too generic. When your name is just too synonymous for this thing, it experiences genericide, and ultimately that trademark can be revoked. That's not going to happen with Google, though, right?
It could. Oh, I didn't know heroin. Who was fighting for heroin? Sorry, Scooter X is saying, listing all these crazy ones, and I'm like, oh, okay. So,
A bear trademark? Uh-huh. Heroin was a bear trademark? Oh, wow.
Oh.
Gosh. We're all sorts of information today.
The more you know.
I know.
Okay, so
that's what Twig is good for.
So the danger for Google then is, A, it can't control these domains. B, it can't control what people do with the word Google anymore.
Oh, it would be a horrendous decision.
Oh, yeah.
It is so clearly a trademark. And Google defends it. Google had to sue this guy. That's how you defend the trademark. I can't see the Supreme Court taking this case. Yeah. Somebody's appealing to the Supreme Court, but I can't see them taking the case. So I think it's a bit of an overblown headline. Supreme Court could decide. Well, yeah, I can go and appeal, you know, my parking ticket to the Supreme Court.
Anything's possible.
Yeah.
But yeah, I couldn't see that happening either. But in this day and age, you just never know. even the seemingly impossible is possible, I suppose. I don't know. Google's just got so many other things going on.
Oh,
Google as a search term, like Google as being synonymous for search, yes, but Google means so many more things other than just search.
It's interesting that's a factor in the case, that it is not synonymous merely with search.
Mm-hmm. Well, that helps keep its company name that is an important aspect of the case. So that makes sense.
I'm also wondering whether does the fact that tweet is a variant on Twitter, is that helpful to the corporation Twitter? Because the verb became a different word. You know, if it's I'm gonna go Google that, as opposed to Google that. Would that be helpful that we used a different word, but it still was associated with Google? I thought it was kind of funny. People said, "I'm gonna tweet that." I got the joke, of course, but I would Twitter that would be more sensible.
Mm-hmm.
The problem here is how many company names like this are turned into verbs in the internet age? You don't Microsoft anything, you don't Yahoo anything, you don't AOL anything, you don't.
You Uber places, but you take an Uber, so it's both for that. Let's see. No, you consult Wave or Waze.
Do you Slack things?
Slack me.
Really?
We have said, Slack me or send. I mean, we use other phrases too, like send it to Slack or whatever. Let's see. Dropbox.
I don't think so.
Dropbox isn't one. I'm running through my apps. I'm like, what else might I say?
Skype. Yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, Skype.
Oh, yeah, okay, Skype. Yeah. That's true. Yeah, let's Skype. But Google is generally different in that case, where it is a brand turned into a verb. But still, it's a rotten case.
Yeah.
Oh, Venmo is another one. Yeah, Venmo me.
That's pretty obscure.
That's not obscure to like anybody under the age of 30.
Ooh, sing.
I'm not just.
Ooh, ageist.
It's, I mean, if you hang out with people who like are young staffers,
Stacey.
You're Stacey. College kids. Oh, come on. Okay.
All right. You know
the story I want to talk about.
Yes.
You know the story I want to talk about.
What is the story? And we'll come back to it after the break.
Oh, okay. Do a break.
What is the story though? Give a tease.
My fondest hopes for a replacement.
Oh yeah. We're going to talk about that because I completely agree. The Pixel might have a successor.
Might. It's a might. Everybody, a million people wrote the story, but we'll talk about that.
We're going to talk about that. First, let's take a minute, thank the sponsor of today's episode of This Week in Google, and that is Felix Gray. We spend so much time looking at screens. It's our job. We do it day in, day out. We do it even when we're not working, right? Think of how often you look at screens and you might be looking at it. I mean, obviously, if you're watching this, you're looking at a screen now. You might be listening to this podcast to get away from a screen, to distract yourself from a screen. And we've all experienced the eye rub moment where our eyes just kind of feel dry. They feel fatigued. They're tired. You have a headache. Your vision goes a little blurry. It's not fun. You can give your eyes a break with a pair of computer glasses from Felix Gray. Felix Gray's lenses are specially designed to filter blue light and eliminate glare, which many of us know are the two culprits behind digital eye strain. Too much blue light from your computer and phone screen can lead to eye strain and make it difficult to focus on things, especially over time, hour after hour. It all adds up. Felix Gray glasses have blue light filtering material embedded into the lenses, so they remain effective without that ugly yellow tint or color distortion that you find with other computer glasses. Be sure to visit felixgrayglasses.com/twig. And you can find more information on the dangers of blue light. Felix Gray eyewear is beautiful. It's crafted with premium handmade Italian acetate. Their glasses look great, so you can feel confident in any work environment. You can keep it at work. These glasses are not my glasses, but it doesn't matter. I'll wear them anyway. What do you think? Anyways, I've been wearing them all morning. I've been using them to work. And, you know, I feel like I stare at screens all the time, and I'm so incredibly used to my eyes being sore. And I've looked at a lot of screens today in preparation for this show, the Note 8 announcement, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And my eyes feel great. They feel awesome. Non-prescription and reading lenses are currently available, and prescription glasses are coming soon. Reading prescription ranges from plus 1.0 to plus 2.5, or you can add plus 0.25 magnification if you're fixated to your screen. Programmers, financial analysts, etc. You know, a lot of people can benefit from that. All orders include free shipping and free returns, so there's no risk in trying them out. You can get them, try them out, see how they look, see how they feel, and I think you'll love them. Give your eyes the break they deserve. Go to felixgrayglasses.com/twig today to try a pair of Felix Gray computer glasses and discover a smarter way to work. That's felixgrayglasses.com/twig, and we thank Felix Gray for their support of This Week in Google.
Okay, all right, now I'm going to just blink the whole time.
So
I'm like sitting here going, oh, my eyes. Okay.
Do you? Yeah, I know. Sorry to clue you in on how uncomfortable your eyes are right now. But, hey, we got to do what we got to do. All right. So this is the first gen.
I'm going to do my presidential impression.
Can you see after staring at the sun for so long? That's what I want to know. I'm very, very curious. We can talk about that here in a little bit. But before we do, this is the first generation Samsung Galaxy. Not Samsung.
Bite your tongue, Howell. Bite your tongue.
Chromebook Pixel. That's Thank what you. I meant to say. Sorry. It's a Samsung announcement this morning. I'm all messed up in the head, Jeff. Help me. I've been waiting to replace this with whatever.
Is that a first or a second generation?
This is the first generation. I didn't get the second generation because it was still fine. It totally has been a great Chromebook.
My first generation is poking along now, but I have two second generations. here. But it's still a wonderful machine. I love it dearly. Love it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm sure at this point, like, I still have a hard time, like, thinking about why I need to replace this other than that it is as old as it is. What's that? 2014 was when it came out. Still does a great job with what I use it for. But rumors say that Google's hardware event in the fall, it might actually have a new Chromebook Pixel. Finally. Possibly with a two-in-one design. And that would actually be really cool considering the fact that Chrome OS now has great support for Android apps. So having a two-in-one design transferred into tablet mode, Android apps, you know, kind of might make a little more sense with some of the apps that you're using. There's also a weird patent that that was posted about that hints at a keyboard trackpad hinged cover sort of thing. If you look at the patent, it kind of hinges up and it's kind
like
of
a surface.
Some are wondering if this is to hinge up as a cover as it transfers into tablet mode, or maybe it's a stand.
I think it's a case of overplaying a patent.
Yeah, you think this is just
I don't see this coming to market immediately.
Well, I don't understand what that flap would even be used for. I don't get it.
Ooh, I think the problem it's for is hiding your Scrabble tiles.
Yes. There, you figured it out. I feel stupid for not realizing that.
Bouillon cubes. When you turn the thing around, the problem is that, and you put it on your lap, the keyboard is exposed. It could just be a protector.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. For a hinged convertible. I think it'd be a little much, but okay. I think this is one of those cases when somebody had an idea and they said, "Oh, sure, patent it. We want more patents."
Right. Yeah, we might not actually see that with whatever laptop is.
It does look like it covers the keyboard in this bottom.
I get what you're saying. The idea being you transfer it into the 2-in-1 tablet mode, and instead of having a weird looking keyboard just hanging off the back of the underside of the tablet,
you cover it up
with this elegant cover.
But
and
then
it's
look
just
at the proportions there. Not that this is drawn to scale,
right?
But means there's a really tiny keyboard or one huge honking laptop.
Yeah,
because if you fold that thing down, it doesn't even go halfway.
No, you're right.
And you got to get a whole keyboard in that little space there in the proportion.
I
don't see that, because what this necessarily means is the flap has to be at least as big as a keyboard.
Yeah. Yep. That's kind of what that alludes to. But yeah, you're right. It also means that your keys might not have as much travel, right?
True, too. Yes. Which would be bothersome.
Yeah. What do you mean by travel? Like clicking down? Okay.
How far up and down they go?
Yeah, like I can't get into the keyboards with the keys that have very, very little travel. My wife has the MacBook Pro, the latest one.
Yeah, I don't like it.
I have a hard time typing on that thing. I just don't like it.
I do too.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, my MacBook has very shallow keys, and I love it. They still click like I get in trouble for typing too loud. Oh, I know. Good Lord.
Yeah. But anyways, Jeff, I'm sure you're excited, although it doesn't say whether there would be mobile network support, because I know that's a priority for you.
But I'm never going to get LTE on it. It's not going to happen.
No.
It's gone.
I got a dongle you could buy.
We will also possibly see a smaller Google Home. Like an Echo Dot sort of miniature Google Home device at this event. That's what rumors are pointing to anyways.
The thing I'm excited about, mm-hmm. are we going to talk about the earbuds with
Assistant? Go for it.
Because I thought that was pretty cool.
That was also, I love that kind of sleuthing when you pull back those builds and find the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In the not Bistro, it's Bitro?
Bisto,
that's it.
Bisto.
It's like, it's not a word that's real, but it sounds disturbingly real. So I would love something like that, because Assistant is actually super useful.
Bisto is a well-known brand of traditional British foods in the United Kingdom, most famous for its gravy products. So I just want to make sure we stayed on our theme here before we go too far off of it, of ridiculous food things. So
you could order Bisto
from Walmart using your Google Home. Yeah.
Google Home.
Right. Okay. So this is gravy on the story here. Go ahead, Stacey.
No, that's because it's icing on the cake, or it's just gravy.
Gravy granules, to be honest.
Doesn't that sound wonderful? It's the nation's favorite, not this nation, fellas.
Just add boiling water.
I just found out you can buy a whole chicken in a can, so I'm not going to mock people for putting gravy in a can. Just whatever floats your
boat. I apologize, Stacey. So now, Bisto, keep going. Go back. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. So basically, they broke down the APK, and they discovered references to Bisto, which looks like Google Assistant in headphones, which, exciting. That's all I know about it. But to me, that was
neat is how you
can
see the functionality they're building in. That you can turn it off, how it's going to respond to you, and things like that, which was kind of nice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing, obviously it would connect to the phone via Bluetooth. It has a button, a hardware button that you could use to summon Assistant. And because it's connected via Bluetooth, I'm sure all this is passing through to the phone. So, you know, when you need to ask it to tell you something, you just hit the button and ask it, and you get your answer in your ear. You also get notifications in your ear. You hear the reply to your queries, all that kind of stuff channeled into your ears.
Now, it doesn't, you can choose, I assume you'll be able to choose your notifications, because there's a huge backlash again about notifications. And I'll be honest, they are going bonkers.
Yeah.
But can you imagine, yes, like just bing, bing, bing? That's no. So, do you do separate in-ear notifications, but your headset gets more? I'm really curious, like as a developer, how you're going to have to start thinking about notifications at different levels for different UIs. And you may never know what someone's going to be on at any one point in time.
Yeah, it could also depend on which version of the OS that you're on. We haven't even talked about Oreo. We could talk about that next. But one of the features of Oreo is notification channels, which is like grouping notifications, and it's all customizable on the user side. So I could say all of my messaging notifications go into a single notification channel, so it can be collapsed. It's a way of organizing your notifications. Maybe you add priorities based on that, and you say, actually, when I'm out and about, I do want to hear all of my notifications that come from messaging apps. I don't want to hear notifications that come from Google Photos when it says it created me a collage. Like, I don't need that.
I don't ever need that.
The fear, of course, is so I've got things now that Android is on my Chromebook. There are certain things that like the New York Times opens up when I click on a New York Times link, it opens up the New York Times app rather than the New York Times on the web. And I don't want that. And I have no idea how to go fix that. No idea.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm stuck with this forever. I've gone through every setting I can possibly figure out. I've tried to search for it because it's too hard to search for. Somebody in the chat room, I'm sure, will be smarter.
Can you just delete the New York Times app from your phone?
Well, but I want the New York Times app. I just, when I click on a link, I want it to go to the web so I can then share it and do the other things I do with it.
Oh, so the app
is so for certain things. Yes, this happened to me actually, because an awesome book was on sale. So I tweeted out that it was on sale and I wanted to give a link to the Amazon link, but it kept opening in the Amazon app and I couldn't share the link and I was very angry.
Well, there's a little link on top that says to get link. And if you have the affiliate thing, when I get a link, it includes my affiliate in it. So I'll make 3 cents.
Shh. Grr. Grr. Stupid apps. Break in the open web.
Arr. Yeah. Yeah.
And even if you didn't have the app installed, it's possible that it would serve up the instant app of the New York Times page anyways.
Speaking of segues.
Is there something in here on instant apps? I may have missed it.
Well, in the sense, I sensed something in Oreo, I think. It sounded like instant apps to me. There was one of the descriptions of the Oreo functions was that you could open an app even without downloading it.
Oh,
yeah, that was promised so much longer ago or so long ago, and I was so excited about it. And then, like, this was not even last Google I.O., but the
I.O. before.
It was
the I.O. before, that's right.
Yeah, you're talking, okay, so you are talking about instant apps. That is instant apps. Same thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and you know what? I have yet to really see that appear organically. Like, I think I've forced it to happen, knowing, like, one of the apps that if I did a search for that particular service, it would probably come up, and it did, and it was kind of neat. But I haven't just, like, stumbled upon it in my searching on Google for things. on my mobile device, but it's out there. It's definitely rolling out more and more, but I don't think there's
well,
a whole
was it designed to be part of Assistant? Because the idea was Assistant might say, oh, do you want a table for, you know, you want reservations? And then it would, instead of opening up OpenTable, it just like make that happen via. I always thought it was part of that kind of, because if you have an AI doing stuff for you, why the hell, heck, does it need to open up apps and give you choices that you're just going to have to deal with later? It should just do it, which means you would need something like Instant App. It would start doing those negotiations for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my hope.
I wonder how they are interrelated between what you could do through Assistant and what you can do through search. I know you can get to it through search, though. If you do a search for like, God, what is one of the services? It's been a while since I tried it, but you know, one of the like Kayak or something like that, a travel assistant service like that. Sometimes it'll pull up the actual app experience, even though you don't have it downloaded, and that's Instant Apps in effect, working through search, not necessarily through Assistant. But I haven't heard that as much around Android O. I think it's just like coinciding with it. Like you said, that was announced a couple of years ago at Google I/O, and now they're finally starting to roll that out. But we do have Android O. It's a thing now, and this is like my third day eating Oreos. I'm not sick of them at all. But Android
Oreo. This was life-changing. You know that there are peanut butter-filled Oreos, peanut butter cream Oreos. This was life-changing for me.
Are they good?
Absolutely life-changing. Oh, yeah.
It sounds like it is.
Oh.
It might be life-ending. They're so good.
Be careful. They've got a ton of flavors of Oreo now. So it's not just
this is food day.
Yes. Every story we will tie into some sort of food product.
Peanut butter cream. And there I can see the first link is they're available at Walmart. So I could ask my Google Home to send me Oreo sandwich cookies peanut butter cream.
At the end of September. Yes.
Yes.
Don't rush out and try it yet.
Wow.
Are those seriously all Oreo flavors?
Well, there's Japan and China.
Oh, my goodness.
Green tea Oreo.
They went a little crazy here, I think.
They have pumpkin spice Oreos.
Strawberry milkshake Oreo? Brownie batter.
Oreos are nasty. Ooh, brownie batter is delicious, though.
Dulce de leche.
Candy corn Oreo.
We got those at our house.
Oh, really?
So my husband tested those, and yet not good. But I don't like Oreos, so I'm really the wrong person to talk about this.
Oh geez, Stacy, we are finding out you don't shop at TJ Maxx. You won't shop at Walmart. You don't like Oreos. Oh, geez.
Learning a lot about you today.
I grew up on Hamburger Helper, so.
Oh, I don't believe it now. No, I don't believe that. No. Or you're trying to deny your true history.
No, it's true. I did grow up on pumpkin spice on Hamburger Helper. I had a working mom. That's what working moms feed their kids fed their kids.
I had my fair share of Hamburger Helper as well.
See?
I feel you.
Delicious.
Yeah, and then I went back to it as a grown up. I was like, I remember liking this as a kid. No.
I
it was better as a kid.
Frozen vegetables in there. I was like, oh, this will be better. I'll put some frozen peas in. Oh, no.
Spruce it up. Make it a little healthier.
Twit fans. I'm sorry.
I think maybe we're all really hungry or
something. I've brought it back a lot. I'm enjoying myself in a perverse way. I'm sorry. I apologize to you. But again, I'm going to repeat. Would you rather food or Trump? Just decide.
Fair enough. I think this is a wonderful tangent. I'm going to take some food. I mean, Carson took the camera. I feel like I'm compelled to eat an Oreo. This is double stuff, by the way. There's enough flavors of Oreo. Like, it's always a thing on All About Android, by the way, that every time there's a new dessert, we bring in the dessert and we eat it. Usually lasts a couple of weeks. There's enough different flavors of Oreo that we could probably do this at the beginning of the show for the entire year that Oreo is a thing.
We could be powered eat that on air. You're going to get that horrible Oreo mouth. It looks like you're a little kid who just ate dirt.
It happens. I'm probably going to wait until I'm not talking anymore. Android O is Android Oreo, if you haven't figured that out by now. They had an event. Was it yesterday morning or Monday morning?
It was
Monday morning. And it was it was Monday morning. The unveiling of a statue. It's basically the Android Oreo figure emerged out of this statue.
This is in New York. How do I not get invited to these things? This is pissing me off. I would kill to be there.
You really needed to be there for this, let me tell you. This was a spectacle to be seen. It rises out of the cookie. All right, Google did it. I'm not sure what it is, but they picked Oreo. I don't know what we expected out of that event. It was literally an event that was just here's a statue. But, hey, it was fun. They have a new superhero. The Android mascot this time around is a female superhero, by the way. Body of the Oreo cookie. It's a total co-branding partnership. You probably remember Google did this a few years ago with Kit Kat. They had a co-branding relationship with that, and I just didn't think they were going to do that again. Everybody was pointing to Oreo as being the next version of Android. I didn't think they were going to go there again, but apparently I was wrong.
Wait, I'm sorry. This is a girl?
Yes.
Oreo?
She is a girl.
Okay. How do we know that?
Cookies have no gender.
No. The cookie might not be a girl, but the Android mascot with the cookie embedded in her stomach is a girl. This is what Leo would make an appropriate joke.
Calling you
but how do we know? We see we can do without that. We'll skip right over that happening. It's going to be awesome.
He's not here.
But how do we know the statue and the android is
because that's the cape. Anybody can wear a cape.
Yeah. No. Ad Age had an article about this. Ad Age kind of covered the lead up to this. And
green two tone socks mean girls. I don't get it.
That's what they said. I trusted them. Not sure if I should have trusted them, but I did. Actually, Google also said this in their announcement. What did they say? They said Oreo combines the intelligence of Android and the playfulness of Oreo. And they mentioned, I don't know. You know, it's all marketing speak. But
let's talk about Project Trouble, because that actually is really possibly pretty cool. And I'm never going to understand the concept of a female Android cookie, so I'm just going to give up. My brain is just going to go away from that and into updates and modular architectures and how this could mean better support. So
yeah,
let's talk about that.
Yeah, no, Project Trouble is a big deal. I think Project Trouble, in my understanding of it, is the beginning of Google finally. Google's known for a long time that Android has has an Achilles heel, which is its update situation. You know, on Apple's iOS, they control everything, right? So when a new version of iOS comes out, you're talking like 95% of iOS users have it within like a week. On Android, we are a year away from Nougat being officially released, and I think it's at 13% of all devices. Now, Android also has an insane amount of users. So 13% is actually a lot of people, but in comparison with the overall pool of Android users, it's a small percentage. And obviously, Google would like that to be higher. That improves the security for a lot of, for its users. And that's just good overall for its brand. Project Trouble is kind of the beginning components of separating the underlying architecture, separating the hardware stack that vendors have access to away from the updatable elements of Android, the code itself. So hopefully what that means is that over time, this in combination with more work that I'm sure they're going to do to kind of separate things further means that Google can push out an update to Android and not have to worry about a lot of this kind of time that it takes for hardware vendors to check the code against their hardware and carriers, check the code to make sure that it qualifies to run on their network. They're kind of separating these things into two separate camps so that Google can do its thing and hardware vendors can do their thing. And Project Trouble is the start of that.
So what does that mean, though, if, you want to update, the software element? Here's Bluetooth. Bluetooth, actually, with Mesh, that will update, if you have the appropriate hardware, all the way back to Bluetooth 4.1 or BLE 4.1. So I'm curious if you wanted to support that in the OS 2. Would you have I'm trying to understand how things like radio support would change with Trouble. Mm-hmm. And if you would have access to the if the OS person has to do it, if you'd have to wait for your chip supplier to do it, and what that means for the application developers who want to use something like Mesh.
That is a great question. I'm not even entirely sure that Project Treble would involve changes to something like Bluetooth, or if it's, you know, targeting something entirely differently. They we talked with the Google engineers at Google I/O just a few months ago. Florence Ion and I did, and we sat down with them, and they were very, you know, they made sure to let us know how much work went into re-architecturing Android from the ground up. They said it was probably the most significant kind of rebuilding of Android code since Android launched. So it's significant, but I don't
Which version? This version?
This version, yes. Because of Project Treble, which...
Because of that, oh, wow.
Because of that, that was at the core of why they've spent so much time working on this stuff. And I kind of got the impression that, like, it by no means solves all the problems like you're talking about, you know, and figures out who does what, but it's a starting point for it. The other really big challenge that they're going to face with this, and this happens a lot with what Google puts into Android and, you know, how slow things roll out, is what do OEMs, hardware manufacturers, what do they actually spend their time adopting? Oh. It might be part of the OS, but, you know, they might have to make changes on their end. I don't think that is the case with Project Treble. I think Treble kind of comes over if you're creating a device from scratch with Oreo. It's Trebleized, as they call it. But there are other efforts that suffer that.
Yeah, and it actually looks like the OEMs would be in charge of, like, their hardware firmware updates that would change your, like, networking functions. The difference is the Android stuff and everything running independent on those, they now run, like you said, independently. Mm-hmm. So if I'm redoing Android, I don't have to check every version of Android against the current hardware regime, which would make it faster. Okay, mm-hmm. I see now. Mm-hmm.
Yay!
I know that was a long way to get me there. Sorry.
No. Well, I mean, I'm still somewhat confused around Treble either. I'm very happy to see Google taking this so seriously and being creative about, you know, realizing that they needed to rebuild something in order to make this happen. And I really hope it leads to even better things as far as the update situation.
Understand the impact of this. You'd have to get to the O level to then have more rapid Google updates under Google's control, not the OEM's control, to the Google portion.
Potentially. Now, here's where it gets a little tricky, right? Like, the they did say months ago when they first started talking about this that legacy Android devices that are updated to Oreo would not be Trebleized. That it would only be new devices launching with Oreo. The only legacy device that would be Trebleized would be its own Pixel devices from last year. However,
probably because the underlying device hardware would also have to be modularized as part of this. So that makes sense, actually.
Right. No, that makes sense. They did say, though, there was a podcast, I think just yesterday, with a number of Android engineers on it. Chet Haas was there, a few other folks, where they hinted at the fact that they are working with, they said, some companies to update their flagships to Oreo while Trebleizing them at the same time. So we don't know who, we don't know what devices, but they're hinting now more than what they said a few months ago, which is that Treble could be coming to more devices that are just merely being updated to Oreo, and that's good news.
Now I see why you're confused.
It's a little confusing.
Hey, but you know what? When things break, you can call it Treble damages.
Ooh, there's
copyright joke.
Trouble okay, and trouble.
Too much caffeine.
Trouble
Stacey.
And trouble. Sorry. Okay. I'm backing off the
trouble with troubles. Yes.
The trouble with treble. There are also some folks complaining about Bluetooth issues with Android 8. And actually, this Sam Abuelsamid of the Wheel Bearings podcast, we have him on Tech News Today every once in a while to talk about autonomous vehicle technology and stuff. He had told me that, prior to this update, had broken his Bluetooth auto connectability with Android Auto a few weeks ago, and he was wondering if this new update had fixed that. But apparently, a lot of people who are updating to Oreo are finding that their devices won't connect to Android Auto when they get in, has trouble connecting to headphones, might connect, but then drop out intermittently.
I have a little bit of that on my Pixel.
And your Pixel is updated at this point? Are you on the...
Well, updated to what? To O? No. Oh,
okay.
So maybe it's just not a problem.
Yeah. I don't know if this is the same or a different problem. By the way, if you want to get in on Oreo, because it's the official release at this point, sign up for the beta and you'll get a push to... you'll get a notification right now that you can update to Oreo.
Oh, what was that? Say, sign up for the beta.
If you are on the beta program, you can have access to Oreo right now.
I thought I was.
Check your system update and see if it'll trigger it.
I did about an hour ago.
Oh, and nothing.
Nothing.
And strangely, you'll know you're on Oreo if when you go to settings, A, it says Oreo, and B, when you do the Easter egg tap, you know, where you tap on the version number and it pulls up the letter or whatever. If you go through that whole process, it'll pull up an octopus. It doesn't pull up an Oreo. It pulls up an octopus. Go figure. Confusing.
Nope. Hmm. Nope.
Nope.
Maybe there is a limit to the trademark. Hey,
yeah.
So
maybe there is. Yeah, that's a good question.
Did you get the Essential phone or?
I know. You know what? Leo's waiting for it. We have not gotten the Essential phone. I asked him the other day if he got a shipping notice for it, and he says he hasn't even gotten that, even though he got his order in very early.
Okay. I'm still in the market for a phone, so I'm like, oh
it's a good time.
Note
for you,
8. Stacey. I know. That's why I'm like, I'm very eager.
Yeah. Well, the Essential, I mean, Ron Richards, All About Android, he went to the Essential event in New York on Monday. And we talked about it and showed video that he captured while he was there. He got to play around with the Essential phone. We talked about that on yesterday's All About Android. So you can check that out if you want. But he was very impressed. Everything that he saw, he said that the device just felt significant. You know what I mean? Like it had a nice weight to it. It was super elegant. He was incredibly impressed. So
okay.
Seems like a good
or my
option.
$1,000 Note 8.
We'll talk about that next. Let's talk about that next. Yeah. We definitely need to dive into Samsung.
I want to hear your
perspective
on that, sir.
I've got opinions, and we will we'll chat about that. But first, let's take a break and thank the sponsor of this episode of This Week in Google, and that's LegalZoom. I love LegalZoom. I've been using LegalZoom for years. I used them when we had our first kid to set up and actually create our will. And it was the easiest process in the world. And so I love it when I get to do their read, you know, to promote them because it was just so awesome. It's National Make-A-Will Month also. So it's perfect timing at LegalZoom. That means it's time to take control of your family and your assets. Preparing for your family's future is the most important thing that you'll do this summer. Sure, there's a whole lot to think about. We've got lots on our minds, but that's why LegalZoom created an estate planning kit to get you going. Go to LegalZoom.com/prepare and you'll get your free kit. You'll receive helpful information and LegalZoom discounts, all the things that you need to stop procrastinating, stop putting it off, and to start preparing for your family's future. LegalZoom designed this kit to provide the tools you need in all in one place. Whether a will or a trust is right for you, you'll get special LegalZoom discounts, plus an estate plan checklist, an ebook, and other information to help you decide. LegalZoom is not a law firm. If you have any questions, you can always get advice from their network of attorneys available in all 50 states. And yeah, the process is super simple. I actually have to go back in there and add our second daughter to this. I really need to take advantage of this and get her added. I know it's the right thing to do. And that's the thing. It's so easy to put this off. But you know that it's the right thing to do. You know that the sooner you do it, the better. So go to LegalZoom.com/prepare today. There's no obligation. Just great resources to help you protect everything you care about and during National Make-A-Will Month. That's LegalZoom.com/prepare. And we thank LegalZoom for their support of This Week in Google. All right, so early this morning, about 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern, Samsung held its Unpacked event and showed off the next Note, the Note 8. Samsung hopes that you will forget everything you thought you knew about the Note 7 and you will embrace the Note 8. They actually started the event I wasn't sure if they were going to address it directly, but they started with a promotional kind of video about, you know, basically addressing specifically, like, we let you down. You put your trust in us.
Oh, really?
We let you down.
Oh.
And, you know, but then showing all the people who, you know, stuck with Samsung and, hey, thank you for sticking with us and all that kind of stuff. So they addressed it first and foremost.
Smart. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they showed off the Note 8 design similar to the S8. I have the S8 Plus here. Let me get the fingerprints off it because it is a magnet for fingerprints. But I have the S8 Plus here. So it's very similar to this in the kind of what they call the infinity display, the edges on the side. On the Note 8, of course, you'll have the S Pen that pops out of the corner down there. Very similar. It's basically the same design language as what you have with the S8 and the S8 Plus right now. But a little bit larger, 6.3-inch infinity display. The infinity display, of course, means that it's a little bit less, almost bezel-less on the side because it drops over the side, but reduced bezels on the top and bottom. It really kind of makes it feel like a smaller device. Nice Snapdragon 835, which is pretty standard for the premium smartphones this year. 6 gigs of RAM, most RAM that they offer. S Pen, like I said, live message GIFs, so you can draw a message with your S Pen, and then it animates that drawing in the picture that you send to whoever you're sending it to. So when they look at it, it like shows it drawing on screen. Samsung likes the splashy things like that. You can do live translation of text. You can write on the
Google
lock screen.
Used to do that with Hangouts. If you drew something in Hangouts, it would show the drawing happening in Hangouts.
Oh, just really? Remember that.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. When Hangouts was a web interface where you could put on the mask.
You would draw it with like your mouse, you know, on the web interface, not actually in the, I know, I'm old.
No. I've used that web interface a lot. And yeah,
I like
you could put on the masks and everything.
Yeah.
All that stuff. This is the first Samsung phone with dual camera support. So it has dual rear facing cameras, a wide angle 12 megapixel with an f1.7. Aperture and a 12 megapixel telephoto camera, same aperture, 2x optical zoom, live focus mode for getting kind of like the bokeh foreground, background kind of blur. And that's done in real time. So this is kind of cool. When you take a picture like that, it pops in and you can take the picture, you know, with and preview how things in the background look blurred compared to things in the front of the foreground being sharp. But what you end up with after the fact is you end up with a full res image as well as the combination image that you can then tweak after the fact and say, I want the background to be more blurry, less blurry, whatever. So it gives you just everything, which is kind of nice. Launching with Nougat, not launching with Oreo. Sorry about that. And yeah, I don't know. Are either of you like Note aficionados? Did you like the larger
ones? My parents loved the Note so much that they didn't get rid of theirs even when they were exploding. They stuck it at Pyrex dishes at night to charge.
The Note 7? So they did not give back their Note 7?
They finally gave it back when I think Verizon started cutting people off. But up until then, they...
Wow.
They did not give them up.
Wow.
They don't fly. but... So, yeah, they are definitely, like, my mom was looking at this and she's like, ooh. But then she saw the price tag and she's like, ooh.
Yeah, it's a little pricey. I mean, we are right on the cusp of $1,000 smartphone.
Well, they can get a break. But this says they can get a break.
Yeah, I see this.
Yes. Now, we found that out after the fact. So, okay, so the price without the break, $930 on T-Mobile, $950 on AT&T, $960 on Verizon and Sprint. If you pre-order, you can take your pick of either a Gear 360 thrown in or a 128-gig flash micro SD card along with a wireless charger. So you can take your pick of either of those if you pre-order. If you buy through Best Buy, they'll also knock off $150. However, if you bought and whether you returned it or whether you still have it or whatever, I'm curious to see how they handle this. The Note 7, you get up to $425 of a discount off of the Note 7, which is crazy.
Significant. Yeah.
That is. Well, because Samsung, I swear, they gave my mom a Gear 2, which, you know, but they gave her a watch. They gave them the VR headset. What was that?
Yep, the Gear VR. Yep.
There we go. Okay, the Gear VR. So they got all this stuff just the longer they held on. So
wow.
Lesson learned.
Yeah. So a discount, yay. Maybe they'll do it.
And
they
kind
of feel more loyal now. They're like, well, you know, yeah, they did exploding phones, but ours didn't explode. And look at all this free stuff we got.
Well, I mean, isn't that the interesting story here? That's what kind of fascinates me, is that when all the Note 7 stuff, now maybe it was overblown, but people really reacted to it. The press certainly reacted to it. Mm-hmm. You know, you did not stop hearing about it. And I'm guilty of that. We talked about it so much on this network and on the shows that I was doing. It just seemed like a really big deal. And I think the reason I was concerned about it is that Samsung was near, if not at the top of the heap at the time. I was like, man, they can only go down based on this experience. Like, this is bad for the company. Turns out Samsung has had record-breaking revenue the past few earnings calls. People who were Note 7 fans are just as dedicated to this next Note as they were to that one. It really did very little, I think, to damage their brand loyalty, their brand reputation. And that's just a really, I don't know, that's pretty significant for that company.
Well, they did. I mean, they didn't tell us what exactly was happening. But when they realized that there were phones that were unexplainedly and unexpectedly exploding, they took care of it. They didn't, I mean, that goes a long way, I think, to fixing it. I think, though, at the beginning, they may have been less chatty, but they once they realized the scope of the problem, they changed their tune really quick.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. It was existential for that part of the company.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it seems to have worked for them. Although nearly $1,000 phone, this is not an inexpensive device by any stretch. And I don't know. I think once Apple has their announcement of the next iPhone, I think we don't know the price yet, but one could expect that it's probably in the same price range as this for the top.
When do we expect the new Pixel announcement? When do they usually announce, Google?
I think the last time they had an announcement was sometime early October, I believe, and then it was released end of October. So, you know, those leaks are probably going to start happening pretty rapidly.
So you're not willing to wait that long, Stacey?
No, I can wait that long.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think that's not crazy. And I mean, yeah, my phone is actually, it's getting kind of wacky. I feel it. It feels aged.
What do you have right now? Okay. What is your phone?
I have the 5X. So the Nexus 5X.
Yeah.
It's going to be 2 years old in October, September, whenever. I know.
It feels like about 5 years, doesn't it?
I know. Yeah, right?
It does. Crazy. It feels like forever. But it's not. It is not forever.
It's crazy how fast time flies with that kind of stuff. Feels like it anyways.
Are we done talking about this stuff?
Sure. What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about Sonos and the updates and get your opinions about kind of this concept of services. Are we buying devices? Or are we buying services? Because I don't know if you saw this, but Sonos changed its terms of service in preparation for the Amazon Echo integration. And as part of that, it said it wanted to collect data from people. That we can go into what data. But it also said that if you don't agree to the change in service, eventually some of your Sonos products may stop working. So did you guys not see this?
I did not see this.
Including Sonos products you bought previously?
Yes. So that's what's so interesting. So let's put this on the run. It's a ZDNet story. Sonos says users must accept new privacy policy or devices may, quote, cease to function.
Oh, what does that do with privacy?
So it's supporting.
I thought it'd be like a copyright licensing or something like that. Privacy?
Well, okay. I'm trying to remember. Oh,
this is probably just to protect their
rear
ends.
It's the privacy. So the privacy policy is to get data from the devices. So when you take data from devices, so they want what's called they call it functional data, including your email address, IP addresses, account info, device data, information about Wi-Fi antennas, your room names, and error data. So there's apparently users can opt out of some kinds of data. Personal information, but not that data. And if you don't agree to that, then some of your devices over time may cease to function, is what they're saying. So it's their privacy, but it's also the privacy party is part of their terms of service.
And they're saying that their service requires these pieces of information. They say you can opt out of submitting certain types of personal information to the company, like additional usage data, performance, activity information. But yeah, once you switch off that data that they feel is necessary for all of those devices to perform basic functions, things aren't going to work the way they used to. Man, I don't know how I feel about that.
So I think it was last week, Plex, the digital media company player thing. I never know what to call Plex.
That works.
A media server?
Media server, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So they changed their terms of service and it's remarkably similar. So I just wanted to bring this up because I think this is an issue that there's actually a good reason for this, but I think it's an issue that we're probably going to encounter more often as we buy more connected devices. But it's also an issue where I think companies can handle it a little bit better. So like Sonos, I have six Sonoses and one of them I bought all the way back in like 2008. And, you know, if that guy, if I decided not to update my Sonoses and that guy stopped working next year, I would still have had 10 years. So what I feel
you bought it with the presumption it was yours forever.
I did.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any functional?
There is. So
necessity.
There's two things. If you do the Madam A integration, they're going to be responsible for quality of service. So the idea is they need this information to determine like room information so they can build a skill where you tell the Echo, you know, play it in this room, right? So they need that for functionality, but they also need it to say, oh, the reason this isn't working is because you don't have Wi-Fi service or it's really crappy in this area, right? The challenge is, you could build all of that functionality, but you still have to support your older users who are on this older version that didn't agree to that, right? So then what you've got is a bifurcation of your platform. My hunch is, and I don't know this for sure, is that they wanted to, at some point in time, they're prepping to avoid that bifurcation. They're not saying it's stopping right now. They're saying they may cease to function. So like in 10 years, they may be like, you know what? We've got, you know, 1,000 people left on these old systems. Let's take them off. It's not worth paying a developer, you know, $150,000 a year just to keep this old ratty, you know, system running. So that's probably what's behind the legalese, but it's really crappy that they're not explaining this well. And right. Yeah, sorry. I just talked a whole lot.
No, I'm kind of taking it in and reading over Plex's thing. The EFF is saying, you know, obviously they're critical of this decision on Sonos's part, saying we understand that there are things that you need in order for this to work, but companies like Sonos can do a better job of kind of compartmentalizing the things, you know, the information that's needed and how it interplays with the device to provide those functions. Maybe it doesn't transmit it. Maybe it stores it locally instead. And it can kind of be the best of both worlds. I don't know the reality of that in integration, but I know when I buy something, I expect it to work for a long time. At the same time, you know, I expect it to work forever. But at the same time, we're buying a lot of things that are dependent on some sort of a service in the cloud. And I guess those rules are being rewritten because, you know, services could never last forever.
Right. There's two different angles here. One is that Tesla saying you can't use my car and my software to start your own taxi company. That's ridiculous. I bought the thing, I can use it however I wish. I have the right to use that. It goes back to the doctrine of when I bought a videotape, I could choose to rent it or sell it if I chose. Mm-hmm. Because that was the idea that I bought it and it was mine. That's one issue. So I find that offensive to try to limit my use and turn a physical good into a licensed good. On the other hand, there are cases where to operate functionally, you know, there may be a need to be able to know some data and you got to have a privacy policy. And if we can't know that data to make this thing operate functionally, well, then you can't blame us for not operating functionally or properly. I'm a little more sympathetic to that, but that's awfully obscure and difficult. And it just doesn't sound, I'm not a Sonos guy, but it doesn't sound like they did a good job of explaining whatever the heck it is they're doing and why it's a benefit to the consumer.
And I think as we get into this area, we need much more transparent policies about like how our data is being used. And like if Sonos explains itself, it would help. And also if they came up with a date, like they may cease to function is pretty vague, but people of course are going to flip out. They're like, I mean, I spent $2,000 a couple years ago adding more Sonoses to my system. That's, I mean, I may shop at Target, but that's still a lot of money.
That's an investment. And, yeah. Right.
Yeah. And it, you know, I mean, it's not seeing may cease to function. Either. Well, yeah, it's not. Apparently it's not because it might not work. So that's kind of, but, oh, so here's the next wrench in this. And I don't know if you saw this, but Uber, I think it was the second District Appeals Court of New York. Basically, someone had sued Uber for some surge pricing stuff, but also sued them because their terms of service were like too long and difficult to read on the screen. And the judge was like, oh, that's not true. So what that's done is it said that Uber's arbitration clause that you accept when you click on the TOS, the terms of service, is just fine and dandy in this case, because this guy was like, you don't have to send me through arbitration. I still have a court case because that, you know, because their terms of service were so long and I couldn't read it. The judge was like, no. So now what we're actually going to have happen is a lot of our terms of service disagreements and things like this, they might actually get fought in arbitration and not in the public courts, which I think is a huge problem, because if someone's going to take Sonos to like a class action suit for this, and we're going to see a lot of explanation and what's happening here, that's great. But if they do it behind the curtain, that's terrible. We're not going to have any sense of what's happening to our digital rights as we move more of our economy and property and ownership to these places. Mm-hmm. And that was my second freak out of the day.
How can we tie this into food, though, is the question. We haven't tied this story into any sort of food.
I have a connected oven. And what if one day it doesn't work or...
No, it refuses to make queso.
There, we got there.
You don't make queso in an oven.
It says, well, I don't know. Well, I'm going to make mine though, because all I have to do is microwave mine from Trader Joe's. So, yes. And it's going to say, and your oven would say, we don't shop at Walmart. We don't shop at TJ Maxx, and we will not microwave queso. Can't do it. Won't do it. Against the terms of service, not happening.
We don't microwave queso that doesn't have any nutritional value whatsoever.
But yeah, so I was going to say maybe my oven company signs a deal with, you know, Trader Joe's or Amazon, and so suddenly it will not make any recipes. Suddenly all the recipes that I have grown to love would change. So I love the way it cooks chicken today, but maybe in the future it gets a licensing deal with Tyson and changes the way it cooks chicken. And then suddenly I'm like, wait, no,
But you like it roasted, Stacey.
But you like
you
it
do
roasted
now.
This way now.
Yep. Any kind of final stories from the rundown before we take a break and then get to numbers and tips and picks and everything? Or have we? Oh
no, I was kind of fascinated with. I was troubled by this. The where was it under Google? The service that's trying to it was confusing civility with decency. There it is. Google's anti-bullying AI mistakes civility for decency, and I think civility is a key need right now, trying to recapture civility, recapture decency and respect among people. But I think trying to automate it is not going to be terribly successful. So the New York Times stopped using the Coral Project's online comedy and stuff that they were using to use this instead from Google's Jigsaw, which is an effort to have a learning system that understands how to be taught how to recognize incivility. But this points out that if it, unfortunately what it recognizes is so-called decency. So if you say, that's awesome, then, oh, yeah, that's fine. If you say that's effing awesome, oh, that's horrible because you used effing, right? The subtlety of dog whistles, the subtlety of insults, the subtlety of trolling and tweeting and harassing. I don't know that a system can ever be taught this. Granted, Tay was taught pretty easily how to be that,
right,
how to be awful. But it's fascinating to me that as we try to recapture civility, that some would say the internet ruined. I don't think technology is fully at fault for causing this. I think it exposed it. In any case, I don't think technology is going to be the answer for putting it back, the genie back in that bottle. Stacey?
I was going to say, this is kind of an inverse of the problem that censors have. So if you look at China and their censorship efforts, how people will automate, even kids around parents, they come up with new ways to say, to be in censorship. It's to say things they want to talk about without actually saying the words, right? So language is so fluid and flexible. It feels like any sort of AI is going to be at somewhat of a disadvantage, because if you ban the word Nazi from your forum, people are just going to use, I don't know, Pepe the Frog.
Or you can't condemn Nazis then too. You can't say those people were Nazis.
Right.
Right. With good purpose. That's an excellent example, actually. Right. So Nazi is the Godwin rule, Godwin's law, that by the time it descends to that, but we just have a time in the news right now when literally Nazis and deciding who are Nazis and what we say about Nazis is a critical, I would say, litmus test of civility, leadership responsibility. So these efforts to say that we're going to just put everybody, that the machines are going to make us okay again, that the machines made us all uncivilized and the machines can make us all civilized again, is wrong on both ends. I'm reminded of the time that Nick Bilton, then of the New York Times, freaked out because Robert Scoble walked into the men's room at Moscone Center during an IO with his Google Glass on.
Ah, right. I remember that. Yeah.
And Bilton called me about this, and I said a couple things. Number one, I said, Nick, nobody wants a picture of your junk. Just relax. And number two, don't presume that the technology made us into uncivilized louts that we were not already. It may have exposed it, made it easier, but it may do other things. But don't assume that just the technology makes us do this. That is a technological deterministic view. And I, the technological optimist, don't believe that. So I just found this really, really interesting. I think recapturing civility, to me, in this whole fake news thing that I concentrate on a lot these days, I think that civility, respect, is a precondition for openness to facts, which is a precondition for openness to people's perspectives. So recapturing civility is absolutely critical. But if we think that an algorithm is going to do it, no matter how smart the algorithm, no matter how well trained, we are fooling ourselves. That, I just found it interesting. That's all.
Yeah, maybe at some point these algorithms, the AI gets, you know, there's some sort of breakthrough where nuance, you know, where it takes it to a new level in this, like, understanding nuance and understanding context of
in by the time we're there, ways. We're perfect translation of languages.
Yeah.
Right, because that's the unemotional level where you get nuance.
Right, right.
Nuance varies by people and by culture. Yes. That's also.
Yes.
I mean, I pity the computer. I mean, people suck at it. We just try to be graceful, mostly, when it happens. So,
yeah,
I don't know how a computer is going to handle that, and how people will handle computers handling that.
I wrote a piece some years ago for The Guardian, which I and I won't spell the word out, but I said that BS spelled out is political speech. If you cannot call BS on things, then you are restricted from political speech. So when the FCC and others won't allow you to say that word on the air, or for that matter, YouTube in this context, which is why I'm not saying it, it restricts political speech, not just profane speech.
Hmm. Oh, I just say that's horse poop.
Well, thanks a lot, Stacey.
I'm just saying that, you know, or as my daughter, I pointed out something to her. I came in because I do tend to swear, and she is very judgmental of me. I told her I had seen a survey that said people who swear are more like honest and, oh, more authentic. They are more authentic than other people. And she looked at me and she said, Mom, that's garbage. And the way she said it, she might as well have said BS.
F-ing garbage.
Yes. Nuance. She had just so much scorn. Just, that's garbage. I was like,
that's interesting that your daughter is the Puritan.
She, it's the age. I think when I was nine, I was a Puritan, or ten. I was very judgy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
She just turned 11, so we'll see how long that lasts.
that ends the day she turns 11. That's how it
works,
right?
I still got a look this morning.
Awesome. Well, okay, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and do tips, tricks, and whatever else we got there at the end of the show. I'm not really quite sure. Numbers, all sorts of things. We've got lots of stuff for you left over for the show. But before that, let's thank the sponsor. This Week in Google is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. If you've gone through the mortgage process, you already know that the process is not always the easiest thing in the world. It's dated. It needed a client-focused technological revolution, something to kind of tie in with our digital lives. We do everything online. So why not secure a mortgage online and make that process easier? And that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence that you need when it comes to buying a home or even refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple. It allows you to fully understand all the details and be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. They have trusted partners that allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. All those relationships make it so easy. You don't really have to do a whole lot in the process. It's nice. It's powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. It's based on your income, your assets, your credit. Rocket Mortgage takes all of that and analyzes all of the home loan options for which you qualify. And then, of course, finds the one that's just right for you and gives that to you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/twig. That's rocketmortgage.com/twig. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of This Week in Google. All right, Stacey, why don't we start with you? What's on your mind? What's the thing this week?
So I got a bum light with my IKEA light. So, and I haven't gone out to replace it. So, sucks.
Is this the IKEA smart light? Whatever.
This is the. I'll show you the broken version, which is this guy, the Trodfi.
Oh, okay.
So stay tuned for that, you guys. But I was going to, so my alternate pick is the prepared.org. This is a newsletter I subscribe to. And I think because of the audience overlap, this is about hardware, manufacturing, engineering, and just nerdy tech stuff. So like, it's not necessarily, it's a weekly newsletter. There's also a podcast. But it's like the physical world around you and how it's made. And it's everything from a profile that James Hamilton over at Amazon wrote like several months ago about his trip to a fiber laying ship. So like how that process works, to things like really geeky stuff on teardowns on like Arduinos and chips and fun stuff. So I like it. I think a lot of you guys might like it too.
The Prepared. I thought you said Be Prepared, and that took me to the scouting website.
Oh, sorry, not the scouts. They're lovely too, but The Prepared.
The Prepared.
There it is.
Okay, gotcha.
So, that's just the tool guide for people who do stuff. Oh, what's a rip hammer? I don't even know. But the newsletter, I get the newsletter. Off,
like siding and things? Isn't that what a rip hammer is?
I don't know.
Do you need food to be prepared, Stacey? Are you going to bring us back to the theme of the day or not?
I can take you back to the theme of the day. I can give you a great recipe.
Google has surfaced a wonderful foie gras recipe for me that I can share with you guys if you like.
I was like, mulled wine in August. How do we feel about that? Or I could tell you, you know, the Instapot. Everyone should have one. That is all.
The rip hammer is generally used for framing and ripping construction tasks, while a curved claw hammer is a double-ended hammer that is used for hammering and pulling out of nails.
Okay. That is Jeff's number? No, that's not Jeff's number.
No, but I am delighted. I imagine it was Karsten was funny putting in the queso nutritional numbers under my number.
Nice.
15 calories. 15
calories.
What? It's 15 calories. Calories from fat, zero. Total fat, 0.5. Saturated fat, zero. This is cheese, it's supposed to be. Trans fat, zero. Cholesterol, zero. As somebody said on Twitter, when I put this up, but the sodium is going to kill you at 170 megs. Yeah, 170 milligrams.
Wow, look at that.
Carbohydrates, yeah. 3.
Oh, okay. I was like 2 tablespoons. Never mind. I was like, that's not that bad, actually.
But not, this is queso?
No, it is not.
If it tastes decent, I'm bathing in it.
Carson says it's really good.
Carson's had it?
He's freaking out over it right now. He's jumping up and down. Hands in the air. He says it's really good.
So here's another number. You'll remember that Facebook was paying media companies for Facebook Live when they thought that Live was going to take over the world. Oh, never mind.
I remember that. Yeah.
So now Facebook has Watch, which, by the way, I can't seem to get to. I don't. Do you guys get Watch? Do you have Watch? Do you see Watch?
I have not logged into Facebook since December.
If I click on the video tab on Facebook, I get nothing but the videos I always got. Watch is going to promote episodic serial video shows.
This is their content. Yes, their original.
This is their content. This is a new thing. So they're paying media companies to make shows, and when they did it before, they said, "Hey, we're just doing this temporarily in lieu of the money we plan to make and share with you." When it comes time to monetize Live. Well, now, I don't know if they're saying that or not, but they're paying $10,000 to $25,000 per episode for shows. And the producers will also receive 55% of the ad revenue while Facebook takes the rest. And the shows can be anywhere from 2 to 240 minutes an episode. Most are making them 5 to 10 minutes. And this is Facebook's effort to spawn loyalty in video, to become habitual, to get you to subscribe to things, to get you to like things, right? So it's what YouTube did better socially in terms of video. Now the social company Facebook wants to do, and this is what they're paying for, and this is what they're expecting. So that's my numbers.
Man, and they're all getting into this, like, dumping crazy amounts of money for original content. I'm really curious to see how this plays out in the scope of, like, 5 years.
I think it'd be really interesting.
They are throwing so much money at it right now.
I think we really, Leo would yell at me now, but he's not here. So what the heck?
There you go.
I think it would be interesting for the Twit Network to make an episodic 5 or 10 minute show. I mean, you've done them in the past. You've done these news shows and things like that. Why not make one of those things again? Put it on Facebook. See what you make.
Mm-hmm. And who?
Like episodic, like scripted content?
It doesn't have to be, but it has to be serial. It has to be that you're going to come back time and time again. This is it's a podcast too. No reason it couldn't be that. It's just that people know Twig and they come back to Twig. It's more episodic, or serial.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
So like,
I could make a cooking show.
There we go.
With gadgets.
I think that's what it has to be. Actually, the Tech Bachelor, but I'd have to do some thinking around that and figure out like what that is.
I don't think we should do that show.
Okay.
That's going to be my free advice to you.
Good. I'm happy you talked me down off the ledge. I appreciate it.
Speaking of which, Stacey, was this discussed last week when I wasn't here? The Economist letter that Larry Page should have sent to the guy who wrote the memo at Google?
No, we didn't. We didn't talk about that.
Read it. Have you read it? It's excellent.
I haven't read it. I'm so tired.
I know you're overdosed on it, but it says everything you wish someone had said to him. It's superb.
I'm a little exhausted.
They have the same haircut. Is that true? No.
Short.
Kind of.
Both are short. Right. One is gray. One is not.
Well, okay. Yes. Haircut.
Mine's really quick here. If you use Google Inbox and you have multiple accounts, they added a new feature to Google Inbox that allows you to combine all of your email accounts, all of your inboxes into one feed which is as noisy as you could possibly expect it to be. When I go into mine, you can safely take mine. I'll show you. It's nothing but spam and everything from the folders that I never look at all. So it would be nice to be able to come in here and do some. I mean, there's some legitimate stuff. Sam O'Boyle.
This is inboxes from two accounts or inboxes within one account.
This is all inboxes from any account that I'm signed, any of the all of the accounts that I'm signed in inbox with.
Plural accounts.
Yes. So I've got my work email, I've got my personal email, and all of the inboxes within both of those combined into a single feed.
And you respond to one from your work email that will send back to work versus personal to personal?
I imagine so. Yeah, when you tap through, it's as if you tapped into it from that particular account. So you like
this
noise.
This isn't in Gmail. This is in inbox.
This is in inbox.
That's okay. I was like, I've had this for a long time. And then I'm like, it's inbox.
Right. So, yeah. This was a feature in Gmail for a while. Now you've got it in inbox. I would never use it personally, but apparently some people would. It just seems so noisy to me. Like, it would be nice to have controls and be able to say, these are all the, because I would use it if I could personalize it a little bit and say, these are all the inboxes that I want to be shown just here, and that would be what I would use to manage my email. But anyways, if that's your thing, there you go. The more you know, which could be the title today. I don't know. We'll have to figure that out.
No, it's got to be a food thing.
It's got to be a food thing.
Trouble with troubles.
Be a food thing. Chat room, I know you normally do this after the show, but I think we need a food thing today.
The chat room will work on that, and as they do, I will say we will begin our farewells.
You'll say bon appetit, everyone.
Yes, exactly. We hope that you've enjoyed your entree. It's time for dessert. Jeff Jarvis, always fun doing podcasts with you. Thanks so much.
Always.
Buzzmachine.com. What else do you want people to know right now?
That's enough.
That's it? That's it, buzzmachine.com.
If you care about changing journalism, apply to the social journalism program at CUNY. It is truly groundbreaking, it everything that I say. So that's what I'll plug. I'm going to write about that soon.
Right on.
Cool. Ooh. Do I have to be an undergraduate?
No, it's graduate. Come.
Oh, but then I'd have to move to New York.
Center of the universe.
No big deal, Stacey. It's not a big deal to move into New York. It may seem intimidating, but don't worry about it. It'll be fine. Stacey Higginbotham, always fun to do a podcast with you. Thank you for doing this today.
Thank you.
What do you want people to know?
I was like, you're not going to plug my IoT podcast?
Well, IoTpodcast.com, of course. What do you want people to know?
There are Stacey and IoT, or I don't know.
Or Giga Stacey on Twitter.
You can find me lots of places, but only send nice things.
Yes. Yes,
don't criticize my grammar or my saying y'all. I've gotten a couple of those. I'm like, really? Y'all?
Yeah, if there's one thing we know about the internet, it's that everybody is grammar police. That's pretty much what we've come to expect. And I'm Jason Howell. Whatever. I'm all over the network doing tech news today, doing all about Android, filling in on This Week in Google from time to time. I think in a month, Leo will be gone for a couple of weeks, so I'll be back. I'll be back hanging out with you guys for a few more weeks. That's about a month from now. But if you want to check out This Week in Google, you always can. We record live every Wednesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, probably more like 1:30, really, but 2000 UTC at twit.tv/live if you want to catch the live feed. You can always find our past episodes by going to the show page on the web. That's twit.tv/twig or This Week in Google or this-week-in-google. We've got it all covered. Just don't worry about it. Or you could just go to Google and search for it and you'll find it. You can also find our episodes on YouTube and Pocket Casts and everywhere you find good podcasts. But that is it for This Week in Google. Thanks, Karsten. Thanks, Jammer B, for helping out here in the studio. We've had a lot of fun, and we will see you next week where we talk more about Google and all sorts of things. We'll see you then. Bye.